This episode of Linux Action Show is brought to you by GoDaddy.com.
And by Ting.com. Head over to last.ting.com and save $25 off your first device.
Welcome to Linux Action Show, Season 30, Episode 5. My name is Chris.
My name is Matt.
Good morning to you, Matt.
Morning.
Are you ready for me to tell folks about the big show today?
Oh, yeah.
All right, well, coming up on this week's episode of the Linux Action Show, if you only watch one show about CES this year, this is the one to watch. Turns out, all of the best devices at CES ran Linux, and we're going to give you an epic recap of some of the ones we really love. Just the best of the best coming up in the second half of the show. And of course, in the news segment, we're going to talk about Red Hat and CentOS joining forces, as well as some Valve news and a big OpenShot update. And then in the feedback segment, we're going to talk about a way you can send your desktop picture wirelessly to an HDMI dongle.
Ooh.
Hooked up to one TV or many TVs. It's a really cool project. We're going to give you info about that. But of course, up first, it is our picks. And this first one is a little CES themed. It is a crockpot that runs Linux.
This is awesome.
Actually, out of everything that was announced at CES, the one thing that might end up in my house is this Belkin Linux-powered slow cooker. That's right, this crockpot runs Linux. First of all, Belkin makes crockpots?
Yeah, I know. It's kind of like, how did that even work? Because, I mean, like, we got a new crockpot for Christmas, and so that kind of puts us out of the running here. But that looks cool.
So picture it, Matt. It's Sicily, 1980. No, picture this. You have yourself a crockpot, and you're here doing a Linux Action
right?
And you're like, hey, you know what I want when I get home? Some fine cooking. So you sit down here, you open up your Note 2, you fire up the crockpot app, and you can turn on the cooker from, well, anywhere, because it's...
That's pretty cool.
It's running Linux. It has a whole smartphone companion app for iOS and Android.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's via the WeMo protocol, which is getting more and more notoriety. Mm-hmm. And I think it's getting... Well, come on now. There we go.
There we go.
Yeah. The slow cooker is powered by WeMo, which is based on Linux, and it powers a multitude of other home-based devices. The crockpot is able to be controlled remotely via some apps. And Belkin says it'll be shipping soon. You know,
that's kind of bizarre. I mean, I guess I kind of get it.
We always thought it would be the toaster that came first.
Yeah, see, that I could see. Yeah. Although, I got a pretty cool toaster, but it's not Wi-Fi enabled or nothing, or WeMo, rather.
Right. It is. So there you go.
Wow. I like how it's got the little Wi-Fi fan on the front of it.
I know.
Like, let you know it's connecting.
Yeah.
It's just like, wow.
Yeah, and you can get real-time temperature stats, too.
That's cool. I mean,
it is actually kind of cool.
Because the real downside for me is the fact that it doesn't actually put the food in the crockpot for you.
Well, yeah.
That would be awesome.
Yeah.
But
that's what the robots will do for us.
See, and I really want a robot, but I could definitely see getting the temperature. You know what? Okay, bacon maker, like an oven-style maker that literally has like a refrigeration unit behind that like rotates a fresh set.
You could have...
That would be epic.
Dude, you could have a roll of bacon, so you could have like...
Yeah.
It could be a super thin appliance
with
a roller thing on the back and
refrigerate
it, and you just put a new roll of bacon on there, and it auto-feeds into like a super thin cooker, and you control it all from a Linux-powered controller in there that you have remote access from your Android device.
So engineers, email me at matt@jupiterbroadcasting.com to let me know how we can get started on this.
Let's work together. We can promote that.
I'm going to share my profits with you.
Oh, boy. Actually,
in the form of bacon.
Yeah, exactly. I'd take bacon. If I could just have a life supply of bacon, that'd be great.
Yeah. Cool.
I think it's pretty crazy. And, you know, we kind of laugh, but really, as these types of devices do get connected, they got to run something.
Yeah, totally, man. I'm serious. I would totally take that to, like, Everyday Edison's or something like that and be like, hey.
Everyday Edison.
I'm telling you. PBS.
All right, Matt. Well, I got a really interesting app pick for the Linux desktop and Spotlight that definitely needs some attention. So before we get to that, I got to tell you about a great deal that we have got from our friends over at GoDaddy.com. 30% off anything you want to get at GoDaddy, any new order, if you use the promo code 30DEAL8. 30DEAL8, all one word here. I'm going to type it out right here so you can see it on screen. 30DEAL8. Put a whole bunch of things in your shopping cart. Get some hosting, get a domain, get some email, whatever you need. Put that in your cart and then use the promo code 30DEAL8 when you check out, and you'll get 30% off the entire contents of the cart. You want to use this for a domain? Do it. You want to use it for hosting? Do it.
Nice.
Look, Matt, I can't be held responsible what these people out there do, but one person who will hold you responsible is Mr. Jean-Claude
Van
Damme.
Oh, yes, he will. He's not taking it.
He's in these data centers right now. He is armed, and he has a cyborg heads-up display, which in real time displays who just ordered a 30% off deal, and then he goes with his gun, and he extracts it manually from the server and applies it to your account. And, you know, originally, they'd actually had a computer program to do this, because it made sense to just, you know, automate this. But they discovered that Jean-Claude Van Damme was actually faster at applying those promo codes than the computers could be. It could be because he can travel through time. He is a time cop, after all.
Yes.
Yeah. So this is how you take advantage of Van Damme's lightning quick speed. Use the promo code 30DEAL8 when you check out over at GoDaddy.com. 30% off anything, guys.
30% off. You can't beat that.
How crazy is that deal?
Crazy time.
It's too crazy.
Crazy.
It's definitely go time. So go over to GoDaddy.com. And a huge thank you to GoDaddy.
Ish.
For sponsoring.
Love
the
those
Linux
guys.
Action show.
And I'm really loving their tax banner because that just totally speaks to me.
I know, right?
He's got his head on the table going, shoot me, shoot me, oh.
That's why it's good. That's why it's good.
That's why you do it with GoDaddy.
Yep, 30% off, 30DEAL8. Thank
stuff.
You, GoDaddy.
Love those guys.
Okay, Matt. So my app pick this week comes from, I believe. Here, I wrote it down in my notes so that way I wouldn't sit here and not know it. It comes from Caffeinated Code, and that name might ring a bell if you're familiar with the Ubuntu Software Center, creators of StormCloud, a really popular app in there, and it's also available as a Chrome web app. Also, creators of Nitro, the task management software that has a Linux app and also a web component.
Yep.
Well, Caffeinated Code also makes a program called Springseed. It's simply awesome note-taking. Now, it says it requires Ubuntu 12.04, but friends, let me tell you, I'm not running Ubuntu 12.04.
No, you're not.
And it works okay. So I don't know what that requirement necessarily means, other than maybe it's just not packaged.
It's in the repository for the Arch user.
Yeah. It definitely is. So Springseed is, and let me show it to you, actually. I got it right here. It is a very simple note-taking application with, here's the nice part about it, Dropbox integration. Mm-hmm. So every note I take is automatically synced to Dropbox, and then I can use any plain text editor on Android to open up my Dropbox and continue reading my notes on the go. I can amend the notes, and then it syncs back, and then Springseed sees them. Springseed has a really nice, clean UI. It's not a GNOME 3 app, but it almost looks around like that. And the thing I really love about Springseed for me, the way I do notes, is it has full support for Markdown.
Oh, nice.
All of our show notes are done in Markdown. So, like, here's a raw document where we have, you can see here's the show in its Markdown format.
Okay.
And then when I save, when I'm done editing, it will render it in full-fledged HTML. So now you see
really
I have clickable links and all that kind of stuff. Markdown is a very, very easy language to quickly take notes and then have it very, very easily rendered to HTML. So the fact that it supports Markdown is a huge bonus for me because I already write in Markdown. And the fact that it has Dropbox support means it's super easy for me to edit on my mobile devices where I also use Markdown. Springseed has a very minimal UI. They have different categories. You can store things. You can create new notebooks. You can create new notes super fast. You can throw away notes super easy.
Well, I would imagine if you're a Nitro user, you're going to feel right at home here.
Now, the one weird thing, it has a search, but the one weird thing is, and maybe this is a little bit of it not being meant for other distros, is I have it here in my GNOME dock, and you see here's the main app icon, and then it creates another icon in the dock. So, like, if I close it, it doesn't, I don't know what that's about. So, it seems to be creating an extra icon, but that's such a minor little thing that it doesn't.
That's no big deal.
I don't really care that much. I've noticed it's really lightweight. It's really fast. I've been using it for a couple of days, and I'm pretty impressed with it.
And you got different folder directories you can create things in.
And it comes with some, like, here's a scrap one. These are demo ones that it comes with. I created a last one for last notes, so when I was working on the show over the weekend, I could stash my thoughts in here.
And it gives you the last time and date that you edited.
Yeah.
That's nice.
Yeah, and it just gives you a little list here, and then when this list starts to get long, the built-in search just works super quick. It's really nice.
Great.
And then you can have an all-notes view and... Yeah, it's not Evernote, but the fact that it syncs with Dropbox makes it really easy to pretty much use anything that can read plain text.
That's right, and I have no interest in Evernote, but I'm a big fan of his apps and whatnot. So I would probably use this. I'm already using Nitro, you know, and I'm already syncing with Dropbox. So why not?
Yeah, Springseed, and you can get it at getspringseed.com if you have Ubuntu, and if you don't have Ubuntu, check for a repo. You might find it. It works just fine on Arch. I don't know if there's anything it specifically requires from Ubuntu.
I don't think so.
If
I remember correctly, it might do libnotify, but I think that's Arch will do that though.
That might be true. Yeah. All right. Well, I want to turn our weekly love light onto a project that got a brief mention during our Fedora 20 review, and that's Corora 20. It is a remix of Fedora 20. It's similar to Fedora 20 in the fact that it packages GNOME 3.10 and KDE 4.11. It also adds Cinnamon and Mate as first-tier desktops, along with XFCE. Corora 20, which is codenamed Peach, also has a new the new GNOME application installer that we demoed, and all of the other improvements that Fedora got, the GNOME project got with Fedora. Corora 20 also features LVM SSD cache turned on by default, Vert Manager, and some nice work on KDE 4.11. And here's some screenshots of it. It's very nice and clean. One of the really nice things about Corora is they take care of a lot of the stuff that I find myself needing to set up on a new Fedora install, like codecs.
Right. Like so it's kind of like a Manjaro is to Arch, where this would be.
Yeah, this is definitely straight up Fedora.
It's more Integros.
It's more Integros to Arch, definitely. Okay. And if you want to play with Fedora, but you find their adherence to very strict open source, like, you know, no binary drivers, things like that, Corora doesn't follow that as closely. And so you kind of get a little bit easier of a time if you like to play outside that box that Fedora's in.
Yeah.
So I really recommend it. I ran it for about a week before our Fedora 20 review, and I was super impressed. And I've heard about it from the community quite a bit, so that's why I gave it a look initially.
It's great looking.
Now the official Fedora 20 version is out, and it's called Corora 20.
Nice. Yeah, check that out, guys. Definitely.
Yeah. You can find that over at CororaProject.org, and we will have a link to it in L show notes.
L show notes?
Yeah. Hey, Matt, so big faux show this week. I want to, Broadcasting huge fans, I just want to sort of point your attention over there. Angela and I covered the big plans we have for Jupiter Broadcasting in 2014, including a new studio move, expanding and adopting our very own studio Troll.
That's right.
And some other some longer goals we have out for mid-2014, as well as some more immediate things around Linux Fest Northwest, all covered in episode 159 of the Faux Show. JB's big 2014 plans is the title.
You know, having seen it, I'm going to put it out there is, instead of, because you guys are going to have questions throughout this year as to why is this happening? Why are they doing that over there? Why does that look different? Watch this show and you're going to have all your questions answered. There's so much important stuff you need to know that you should really watch that.
Wordskis.
Yes.
Faux Show 159. I'll have a link to that in the show notes pick section as well. All right, Matt.
Yeesh.
Let's do the news.
Hey, it's the news, and this episode is brought to you by
Ting.com. Matt, Ting is mobile that makes sense. Our mobile service provider. I got the Nexus 5 right here.
Bam.
The Truth Phone. This is the Truth Phone.
The
Why?
Truth Phone, huh?
Because I bought it directly from the Google Play Store, and then I took it over to the Ting Network, got the SIM card. This is my phone. I own it outright. And then, with the great Ting service, I only pay for what I use, and I have no contract, early termination fees. This is one of the things that makes Ting different. Ting is really a no BS mobile service provider, and that's why I've been with them for a year now, and I couldn't be happier. They combine their awesome service with an amazing control panel that lets you manage your devices, activate, deactivate devices, set up call forwarding, set up voicemail rules, things like that. Their service includes voicemail, caller ID, tethering, hotspot, three-way calling, call forwarding. All these are just part of the service. You just pay for what you use. The Ting rate system is truly unique, and it's something they rolled out about mid-2013, and now the rest of the industry was totally caught flat-footed. They're trying to catch up. You see a lot of imitators out there, but nobody does it like Ting. Ting is the OG awesome mobile service provider. They have pay-for-what-you-use billing. What they do is they take your messages, your megabytes, and your minutes. They add them all up at the end of the month. Whatever bucket you fall into, that's what you end up paying. It's a flat rate, $6 to have the line. And then it's just your usage on top of that. That's so awesome because if you have a very variable usage pattern like I do, this fits in a lot more comfortably because a lot of times, well, everybody except for Ting, really, you end up paying into this huge contract that you may or may not get the most out of. Before I switched to Ting, my cell phone bill was north of $120.
Right.
It's crazy, right? Now I've got two phones, and I'm averaging around $30, about $33 these days. Mm. It's so awesome. And the other night, we went to a family event, and the Wi-Fi wasn't working at the family member's house.
Uh-oh.
So I took out the Nexus, turned on hotspot, and then we had Wi-Fi there, and the kids wanted to pull up something on the iPad. No problem. They tethered right to this Nexus 5. We got access, LTE speeds. It was beautiful. And I didn't have to worry about getting caught by my wireless provider by using some sort of hack. And I didn't have to buy into some sort of family share plan to get the tethering support. It just came with it.
It just works.
And if you switch over to Ting Actually, you don't even have to switch, I believe. If you just go over to last.ting.com, that's going to do a couple of things. That'll take you to their landing page, where you're going to get a $25 discount applied to your first phone. Or if you're going to bring a Ting-compatible phone, and they have a BYOD section you can check out on their site to see if your device is compatible. If you bring your own phone, you're going to get $25 off your first month. Now, my first month, that paid for it. That paid for my month of Ting. Now, check this out. If you try out their savings calculator, which is linked right there on the front of last.ting.com, you could be entered into a drawing to win a Galaxy S4. All you have to do is tweet about your savings. If you got something you think is respectable, tweet it out there, and you'll be entered to win. The prizes include also two people win $50 worth of Ting credit. So one person's going to get, a random person will get a Galaxy S4, and two people will get $50 of Ting credit. All you have to do is go to last.ting.com, click on that How Much Would You Save button, figure it out, be amazed by the savings, and then tweet it out. Super simple, and you get entered to win a Galaxy S4 or some Ting credits. So here's how you get started. Go to last.ting.com, go check them out, try out their savings calculator, take a look at their devices. They've got some great devices. In fact, maybe, I don't want to stereotype you, maybe you don't need a smartphone. Maybe you just want something to make calls. Check out this new device they just added to the Ting network. It's a feature phone, Samsung M400. After you go to last.ting.com, this device is $73. Wow. This is a nice flip phone.
That's really nice.
It's a straight up feature phone. It's a CDMA device. You're going to get great signal here in the US. It's got a camera.
Battery's going to last a month. You know?
Exactly. It's got crazy good battery life. It's got a traditional keypad for dialing, which a lot of people like. And when you apply our last discount, $73, you own this phone outright and you only pay for what you use. That is an amazing way to save money. And honestly, I think I could be one of the people that I could go with this and then just have a tablet if I wanted.
Exactly. You know, or maybe you just want an extra phone on standby in your drawer that you don't have to run and pay a fee, big old fee every month. I love that.
They also have this Novotel MiFi 5580.
Ooh.
$130 when you go to last.ting.com, and then you own this MiFi and you only pay for the data usage. So you don't...
Handy.
With all the other carriers, when you get one of their MiFi devices, you're paying a monthly contract on that thing. With Ting, you only pay when you use it. So if it sits in your drawer for a couple of weeks, no big deal.
Yes.
It's pretty awesome.
That's great.
So go to last.ting.com, and a huge thank you to Ting for sponsoring the Linux Action Show. Okay, Matt.
All right.
So we got to talk about this first story. It hit me like a ton of bricks, and it happened right as we were going on the air with Linux Unplugged last Tuesday. Red Hat has announced that it's acqui-hiring, I guess you could call it, the CentOS team. As Ars Technica put it in their headline, Red Hat and CentOS become Voltron, build free operating system together.
Nice. That's pretty clever.
Yeah. So if you caught this in Linux Unplugged, you already kind of know the details. We're still waiting for everything to fully come out, but Red Hat and the CentOS project announced that they'll team up to build what they call a new CentOS. They're going to work together. And, of course, part of this means that the CentOS team will have direct access to Red Hat's legal team and their QA process, which is going to make the CentOS's QA project more transparent. The CentOS platform itself isn't changing, according to the project leader, but the process and methods built around the platform, however, are going to become more open, inclusive, and transparent. And
sounds really good.
The CentOS project will still be separated from Red Hat Enterprise Linux in a couple of important ways. The bugs, issues, and incident handling process will stay as it has been. Red Hat Enterprise Linux to CentOS Firewall will also remain. And some are now working at Red Hat on the CentOS project, but they're not working in the Red Hat Enterprise Linux division.
That's good. That's important compartmentalization, I think. It actually keeps everybody focused on their tasks and makes for the best CentOS possible.
I think really your analysis in Linux Unplugged on Tuesday really hit it, is this is now an on-ramp for CentOS customers to get into the Red Hat offering.
Exactly.
So they can make a little money on that support.
And right? so that benefits everybody. It benefits Red Hat, benefits the customers. It really provides a nice... carefully designed unification without overstepping bounds.
And for a lot of people who have deployed CentOS, this is a win for them because now they know that this isn't the right word, but now they know that their choice of operating system is going to be legitimate for the long run.
That's right.
And, you know, it's not something that was a little bit of a risk. And the reason I mention that is because when CentOS first came about, I really had to sell clients that it was okay to use, even in their testing.
Because where's the buck stop? Well, essentially the buck stops with you because you were using CentOS.
Exactly.
And they may or may not be comfortable. If you have a long-term relationship, sure. But if you're new to the client, it's a little scary.
Yeah. There was some inherent like, so this is somebody who cloned Red Hat. There was this very confusion, and back then there wasn't even really a lot of support for CentOS from like vendors. So this is great, and all of and CentOS now has such a massive install base that huge for those folks.
It just it's actually brilliant. Red Hat really knocked it out of the park on this one.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see now if they push this in a lot of like the VPS spaces and things like that, where right now Ubuntu has a clear lead.
Oh, this is why they did it. Oh, absolutely, because it allows them to basically flank Ubuntu on two fronts.
Yeah.
It really does, because there's a little something for everybody. Okay, well, maybe you don't want to go Red Hat Enterprise. Well, we got this CentOS thing you might want to check out.
Yeah.
And it really does allow them to kind of circle around. And
You're ready to commit to a support contract, we'll move you nicely to Red Hat Enterprise Linux.
It's a little bit like sampling things with, caffeine in it.
Ooh.
Try this out.
Ooh.
It's great new coffee. Check this stuff out.
Or like a beer sampler.
A beer sampler. Like and then pushing the peanuts over your direction.
Yeah.
Get thirsty.
Yeah. They got any macadamia nuts in there?
They might.
So this one we're going to talk more about in our CES segment, but it's big news. We got to talk about the news segment too. Valve has announced 12 Steam partners at CES.
Oh, man.
There's some good-looking ones. There's some really nice-looking ones here. Alienware, Falcon Northwest, Origin PC are on the list, as well as Gigabyte, CyberPower PC, Zodiac Next, Alternet, and Alienware is on there. Yeah, and Alienware came out with they showed off their device. We'll show more of these in the CES segment, but that's a lot of machines, and I'll tell you the one I'm kind of excited about actually is Gigabyte, because they seem like they make the video card, they make the motherboard, they might be able to get the price down with a decent GPU in there eventually.
Prices right
now are ranging between $500 to $6,000.
Yeah, and you got to remember, think back to when Blu-ray first came out, or when DVD first came out, or my personal favorite Laserdisc. That was an awesome format. You know, these things first come out, and of course the prices are sky high, but it was going to drop over time. Yeah. Just give it a little bit.
All right, now can't go on without mentioning the new Humble Bundle 10 is out, and there's a couple of good games in this one. Joe Danger, the movie, looks fun. I haven't played it yet. The one that I'm a Papo and Yo or whatever.
Papo and Yo.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an Unreal 3-based engine game, but it looks really fun. I got to check this one out. Surgeon Simulator's on there. If you don't have BitRunner yet, BitRunner is a fun side-scroller game. My son and I play BitRunner quite a bit, and it's...
Oh, digging the music.
Oh, the full screen is broken on Flash. Go figure.
Yeah, for sure.
Of course it is. I've been having Flash problems. It's funny because I was just complaining about Flash on the pre-show that in Chromium in April, it's going to be going away. And now here we are, and now Flash is... I'm ready for Flash to die.
Yeah, Flash needs to die. I mean, it's kind of like a zombie that you keep forgetting to shoot in the head.
Right.
We keep doing arm shots and chest shots.
It's like
it's
a zombie that does like some chores around the house, so I don't want to get rid of it. Here we go. Here's the small window version. It's very clever.
It's a very cool game.
It's got a very strong art direction.
This script presents Runner 2, future legend of Rhythm Alien.
So he's a rhythm alien. And the more you jump to the rhythm and things like that, the more power you get. And the faster you get going, the more power-ups and stuff like that you get. The more like rainbow streaks behind you. See right now,
it's
kind of farting rainbow.
Yeah, that's my big question. Yeah. I want rainbows coming out of my backside.
Yeah, he's kind of farting rainbow there. Yeah. But it's just a side-scroller, but my son and I have gotten lots of fun out of it.
Yeah.
And To the Moon, I've been told, is a very powerful game. The story, actually, I guess some people say it's very moving. It reminds me a little bit of Zelda.
Oh, it kind of does.
That very much like dramatic Zelda overhead kind of look to it. So and that's To the Moon, and you eventually... Here, I'll skip ahead. See, even like these Zelda-like cutscenes, you see that?
Oh, yeah.
And then if I jump ahead, you can see you get a little moon action here. Well, whatever. You get the idea.
the promo video is not doing it justice, but it looks really awesome.
And I'm so mad at Flash still that I just can't get over how mad I am at Flash. I tell you, Matt, it's the worst. But To the Moon and BitRunner 2 and Surgeon Simulator and Papo and Yo are all really good ones. And, of course, we got to just check in real super quick here. Average Linux price, $7.
Huh.
Linux is still the champ.
There it is.
There it is.
There it be.
So go check that one out. All right, moving right along, a quick notice to you OpenSUSE forum users. The OpenSUSE forum did suffer a leak of email addresses.
Uh-oh.
However, they were using a NetIQ central sign-in, single sign-on system, so the passwords didn't leak because that wasn't...
Because they
weren't stored in the application database.
There was no plain text file holding all your passwords?
Yeah, and it was the username password stored in a different application.
Good
but
stuff.
Some email addresses did leak out. It looks like it might have been a vulnerability in vBulletin 4.x. So if you were an active participant in the OpenSUSE forums, you might notice you get some spam soon.
Yes, well, better spam than getting hacked.
Yeah. So. And last but not least on our news list this week, a real epic update from OpenShot. You remember Jonathan over there is working after his successful campaign to raise funds. He says over the past couple of months, he's expanded the OpenShot development team to include Cody Parker and Noah Figg, who have been a tremendous help. He says tremendous doesn't even do them justice. They have completed dozens and dozens of tasks, worked closely to bring all different pieces together. Noah's focused on the Qt interface, improving core PyQt framework to simplify our coding and solving complicated issues. They also have had work on integrating with the HTML timeline. OpenShot has three different modules, libOpenShot, the Qt interface, and the HTML timeline.
Wow.
Windows development has hit a few snags.
Shocker.
Jonathan says he's been fighting Windows bugs for most of December, and wow, he says, I've seen the dark side of Windows development with regards to working outside of Microsoft's preferred tool set.
Yeah, going back in time a little bit with Jonathan's predictions, he kind of quasi-predicted there might be some issues down the road. He kind of prepared people for that. That's why I say shocker, because I think he kind of knew it was going to run into that wall, and that's good. That's good that he's acknowledged it and he's trying to work through it.
Yeah, he says if any developer out there wants to help him troubleshoot issues on Windows, he'd be very appreciative.
Yep.
He says, I can already hear the crickets chirping.
Yeah, because, I don't think anyone's going to want to do it. And that's too bad. But, you know, hey, the Linux guys, we're going to rock and roll. And even some Mac folks are going to get some
OpenShot. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. And he says he's going to do more updates.
Yeesh.
He'll be doing more frequent updates.
Good stuff.
So we'll see that. Yeah, OpenShot is definitely the project that hadn't made a big splash. We hadn't heard about it for a little bit, but now we got a good update, and I'm so anxious to try it out when they ship it. Another one of the big names that is switching to Qt starting in 2013. So that's a trend we'll be watching.
Very cool. That's a big piece because the bloat that everybody complains and screams about is not going to be an issue with the new app simply because once it go Qt.
Yeah, and it looks like they're doing it in a really sophisticated way too.
Yes.
I'm looking forward to that and. He's got lots of good details in the blog post. It's totally worth a full read because we just gave you the super highlights version, but the whole read's really good.
That's right.
We have it linked in the news section in the show notes.
And for those of you that are wondering, Kden Live and OpenShot are apples and oranges. They have nothing in common, and they're doing things completely different.
And Blender.
I saw
Blender
mentioned
in the chat room. Yeah.
Because that's always why don't you they just blend up projects with? It's because you can't do that. It's like taking an ashtray and blending it in your smoothie. It's not going to work.
Whoa.
I mean, you know.
Whoa.
Maybe not an ashtray, but you know what I'm saying. It depends on the app.
Well, that would be very gross.
That would be nasty.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just that not happening. Yeah. Oil and water. There we go.
There you go.
Oil and water.
All right, Matt. That's all the news for this week. It's time to tell you about the best stuff at CES this year, and guess what? It ran Linux. But before we get to that, I want to tell you about our segment sponsor, System76, creators of machines born to run Linux. I have several System 76 rigs here in the house. Love them. Loved them for years. And check out this Ultra Pro that we reviewed, the Ultra Pro. Such an awesome Linux laptop. Another one we've heard a lot of people say they love is the Kudu. The Kudu Professional is a 17-inch laptop.
Serious
beautiful
unit.
Display.
Really, really
I
well
really
done.
Love the curvature that it has. You can see it right here in this picture. There's a little bit of it's so nice. And then, of course, System 76 has some awesome desktops from the Rattel Performance.
My wife's had her eye on that one right there.
Mm-hmm. Wild Dog Performance is one we kick the tires on all the time here in the studio, and the Leopard Extreme, which is amazing. And then if you want to play with some touch development, they got the Sable Touch, too, an all-in-one. Looks like it'd be great.
Sable Touch is really I've eyeballed that
machine.
A few times. Yeah.
Yeah
it's just
be,
like, ooh.
Yeah, it really looks quite nice. So go over to System 76. Get your machine. Get yourself a Linux machine that is trouble-free. Don't fight the computer.
Nope.
Play with Linux, and that's how you do it. By getting a System 76, you know it's going to run Linux great. And tell them the Linux Action Show sent you.
That's right.
Appreciate it.
Good stuff.
So our buddy Chase was going to join us this week to wrap up CES, but he ended up getting the CES plague. I talked to him last night. I could tell his voice is a little scratchy, and I talked to him just a couple of minutes ago. And he's like, yeah, no voice this morning.
Not happening. Yeah.
Hopefully he'll have his voice back for Unfilter on Wednesday. But I have gone through. I was like a dog watching these with a bone. Every time a CES story came out, I grabbed it, I read through it, I saved it for last all week long as they were breaking because really the only way you can stay on top of CES is as stuff is coming out, and that's insane, especially the first couple of days. Before we get into Linux stuff, there was a meta story that The Verge picked up on, and I think it's relevant to our interests. In fact,
yeah, I think so.
It sort of speaks to the trend that I noticed while following the news, and The Verge picked up on it. Closing Windows, they titled it, Microsoft and its platforms are nowhere to be found. At CES. And they talk about how since it's not at the show, Microsoft has left it up to its hardware partners to push Windows 8.
Yeah, what a marvelous job they've been doing, especially when they've got vested interest in, competing with the company.
So this year, the absence of new Windows PC, especially exciting ones, is noticeable.
Yep.
With a lack of new products and no presence on the floor, Microsoft and its platforms are almost nowhere to be seen. Now, there were some. I mean, they're not saying they're not any.
But I think people weren't necessarily getting excited saying, oh my God, I got to have that. That wasn't happening.
PC makers appear to have paused on Windows hybrids at CES. With any hybrids that were shown were like last year's models sort of recooked. Dell and HP have no new consumer-related hardware at CES. Ooh. Sony simply shrunk its existing flip PC. And Toshiba rolled out two clunky 4K laptops. Lenovo and Asus have attempted to do new things. Lenovo launched an 8-inch ThinkPad tablet, and Asus launched a Wacom-equipped 8-inch Windows 8.1 tablet alongside the new Transformer Book Duet that boots and runs Android.
Well, you know, I think that's really setting a dangerous precedent for Microsoft, and they really better recover pretty quickly, or they could have real problems on this.
Yeah.
In the consumer side of things. I mean, they're always going to be what they are in enterprise, but on the consumer side, they're really kind of screwing the pooch.
Yeah. Let's talk about let's just start with the thing that I was most interested in.
Oh, yeah, right.
And I know not everybody shares the same enthusiasm out in the audience, but holy crap, was I excited to see what Valve had to talk about with the Steam Machine. So we saw 13 machines, and if you're watching the video version, check out how gloriously beautiful these are. That's the Alienware one.
Very polished.
Very small. This is the CyberPower one. Looks very good, too. This one I thought was really interesting. This is Digital Storms, and it's more of a vertical machine. Mm-hmm. It stands upright.
A little more tower-like.
This is a Falcon Northwest with a paint job on
there. Oh, yes. They always do such great paint jobs.
And look at this like almost marble base it sits on.
That's
sure
appropriate.
It's fake,
but that's still cool because it's like they're making something that's living room specific that's going to be spouse approved.
Now, here's it's a Gigabyte that's using the Iris chip to power the graphics. Now, remember, a Steam machine doesn't have to do better than 1920 by 1080.
True.
So you can get away with quite a bit. Here's another shot of the Gigabyte. Very small.
It's like a Roku,
Exactly. It's tiny. It is tiny, tiny, tiny.
Wow. See, I would being a cheapskate and poor, I would totally see myself going this direction if I was ever going to do something.
And here's an iBuyPower, and it glows, too, when it turns on.
Man.
Very slick. Cool. It looks like a slicker Xbox than the Xbox.
It does, doesn't it? Yeah.
Zodiac has another tiny PC. This one's also Iris-based. Mm-hmm. Lots of really cool luggable machines, like there's LAN party capable machines, some that look more like regular PCs too, but check out this guy.
Ooh.
This is the Pixel Jetpack. It's a SteamOS PC that's strapped to the back of your TV, so you have a flat screen TV. This guy straps to the back of your TV and it even it even acts like a rack mountable unit where it can extend out, and the internal configuration looks pretty good. Looks like it's not going to have any problems.
Oh, yeah, great cooling. Okay.
Yeah, and look how so you can slide it out from the back of your TV, replace the components, and then slide it back on because it's on rails.
No bloody knuckles. I love that, right?
Look how awesome that is.
That is really nice.
I don't know how practical that is, but you can see
it
here.
It depends on how your TV's positioned.
It mounts to the TV. Yeah. I mean,
if you've got a rotatable TV, any large television will do.
To me, that looks really cool.
We know which one he wants.
Yeah. Because it's completely hidden, right?
Yeah.
And you don't have to worry about the
HDMI
cable run.
It's powerful and aesthetic, and it's going to stay cool.
Yeah.
I mean,
you could see in here, you could see how it had plenty of space for cooling, right? Because you're doing
it
a small
like
SSD drive.
Three fans there.
Big video card, a mini ATX motherboard. The SSD has its own individual area. Here's the CD-ROM drive.
And the compartmentalization, I think, is really keeping everything. Yeah, that also helps with cooling, I think, as well.
Charum's right, though. These particular types of fans can be very loud. So it depends. You know, maybe they don't have to kick up. I bet the GPU one has to run, but yeah.
It may be okay. I mean, if you're playing a game properly, you're going to be loud as it is, so it may not be such a big deal.
Pretty interesting, though. Another one that surprised me, although probably deserved, Mozilla showed off, a lot of vendors showed this off, Firefox OS on TVs, tablets, and ready for this, desktops. Yeah,
nice.
The consumer electronics giant Panasonic is jumping into the fray with a new Firefox OS-powered smart TV effort. Panasonic's U.S. Vice President of Interactive Content and Services Group, that's a hell of a title, told eWeek that Firefox OS support will land on Panasonic smart TVs later in 2014 on a global basis. He went on to say, "We share a mutual vision. That is, we want to support an open and independent platform based on HTML5, and we found that the Mozilla Firefox OS platform is the ideal way for us to accomplish that vision. We're starting with smart TVs, but this could potentially go through an entire Panasonic ecosystem."
So here's the thing that I find exciting is, first of all, it's awesome to see like Firefox and all these other guys jumping on this stuff. The one thing I think it's going to be the next 3D television is these smart televisions. They're awesome until you realize it's outdated a year later. And you just dropped a bunch of coin on this versus
you know,
a small box.
It's funny because this came up with family members because this didn't make my list, but Roku, which we all love here on the show, Linux-powered little gadget, announced that they're going to ship a Roku TV.
Which I'm thinking,
So the problem is
I don't know.
I was talking to some non-savvy family members, and they brought, well, that's great, because they can't they just update the software over the internet? And yes, but the problem is the processors. And these ARM processors are developing so insanely fast right now that it seems suicidal to lock yourself into a platform like that, because I don't plan to update my TV for ever.
That's right. Because, I mean, if you go back to like how long I hold onto a TV, I've got like a Generation 1 Roku. Try and run Hulu on that. Good luck.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really
well,
painful.
And you see it too, like with the old Apple TVs, like you could hack them, but like they couldn't do 1080p content for the Gen 1 and things like that.
That's right.
And you don't. I appreciate the simple to use nature where you just buy a TV and the Roku UI is built in and TV is just another app. Like, I get that. And the Xbox One does that too. But I just don't know about building it in. So I can see what you're saying with Firefox OS. However, we have also seen some folks that demoed a logic board that has the processor and the memory and the storage.
True.
And it's in the back of the TV, and you undo some bolts, and it comes out.
That's where they need to be. Yeah, something to where it's easily upgradable. You know,
and you could see why they'd want to work with an open OS like Firefox OS to make a system like that capable.
Yeah, no, but once again, another nail in Microsoft's coffin. I mean,
big news for Firefox OS, but Firefox OS wasn't the only Linux-based OS that we've all heard of that's making a big splash on TVs. WebOS is back.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. They're such an underdog. I'm such a big fan of what they do.
LG has revealed massive plans for a WebOS TV platform. Yeah, a TV platform running on WebOS. WebOS will be on 70% of the company's 2014 smart TV lineup. They go on to say, when you first turn on the TV, an animated character called Beanbird. Oh, boy.
Microsoft Bob. What?
Oh, boy. Appears to guide you through the various options. Simple switching is reminiscent of the card UI from WebOS that we're all kind of, it's famous for, really. We're all familiar with that.
Oh, yeah.
Where you can switch between recently used apps. A full-scale app store is also seen in LG's images, complete with selections like Twitter, Netflix, Hulu Plus, Amazon Instant Video, Vudu Cinema Now, MLB.TV.
Yeah,
all of that as apps.
Well, so let me ask you guys a question, because I never really understood this. Who the hell is using Twitter and Facebook on their TV set? I mean, unless you have a keyboard or you really are that plugged
in
where you can't pull away. Who?
The same folks that bought Web TV, right? The people that bought. I mean, what if we get to a point where people.
But there was a keyboard involved there. I'm talking, you know, generationally or even younger.
You
folks.
Know how we've been talking.
The kids are using their phones. They're not using that.
Well, this is my point. You know how we've been talking about the post-PC era?
Oh.
I think the post-PC era, if it is such a thing, it's not going to be one device that replaces the PC. It's going to be a tablet, a phone, and a smart TV, and you're going to have.
Not going to happen all one big drop. It's going to kind of stagger as it goes and flop around like a
Could you thing. Not? So this with this WebOS, if you put all these apps on here. You could almost see how, like, grandma and grandpa would just be happy buying an LG TV. That way they could read their Facebook posts. They could read their Facebook wall. They don't have to have a computer. They don't even have to have a tablet. And, you know, grandma already likes watching TV.
This is true. And if they did actually wise up and, I don't know, offer a keyboard with some sort of mouse integrated, yes, I think that probably do amazingly well, especially
Or, you know, you'd probably control with a smartphone or a tablet.
Yeah, but see, again, look at the market. The kids don't care. They got their phones.
I see what you're saying.
So the older folks that want to do this but don't want to sit there and try and, you know, deal with
the phone. A physical keyboard.
Right. So I think that would be a big – and, of course, WebOS, it's going to be updated forever. It's going to run the same as the day you bought it, no matter what changes. I think that could actually work with WebOS.
Yeah, and the other thing I could see some – like having a live Twitter feed on a TV would be like in a business. You could have like all the app mentions of that company streamed on the TV. You know, you have it in the lobby or something like that. WebOS could power that.
Yeah.
They say the first WebOS TVs will appear in Korea and then later coming to the U.S. and Europe and then to the rest of the world.
If I could give that entire industry a tip, it's solve a problem. Don't just put it out there because everybody else is doing it. Actually solve a problem. Listen to what people are saying. The remotes don't make sense. I want to access this stuff, but I want to be able to do it in a way that I'm used to. Don't try and reinvent the wheel.
What I think is interesting, you can kind of get a glimpse of the UI here. They've done an interesting UI, and you see she's got like some sort of fancy remote she's using right there.
Yeah.
But like, so Netflix is just an app, right? And these are, so what they're doing is they're demoting the TV as just one of the many apps on the screen. And you start up the screen and you have, like on the Roku, you have your tiles, you have your Netflix and all this stuff. And then if you want to watch live TV, you just mouse or you.
That's right.
Remote over to the TV icon and click it and it comes up.
Wow. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it works out. I hope they do well, but I'm definitely skeptical that I think – I just really think they're going to go and do the same thing they always do, and that's try and target people who don't care. So
yeah,
and that's unfortunate because there's such a great audience of people out there that would use this.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we'll see.
There was also, just really quickly for you Bitcoin fans, some pretty awesome Bitcoin mining hardware demoed, and all of it compatible with Linux, controlled by Linux. A lot of it was external. Well, all
that's
of
cool.
It is external processors that are like ASICs.
Yeah.
And some of these, they were even demoing fully, doing full-fledged Bitcoin mining, and they had a USB cable going into an Android tablet. So you could do full-fledged mining. All you need is one of these external ASIC miners and an Android tablet.
I would totally see, and this would be cool because I want to get into the Bitcoin thing, but I want to be one of those guys who got to sit back and just eat his house and mine stuff. I don't want to have to do things for it.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a treadmill, and it's like if you're already not on it, I don't know, man. It seems really hard. But they showed off a 16-card Bitcoin mining rig with water cooling hooked up to a Linux box, where they were monitoring the progress of the mining.
But you get yourself like a bunch of college buddies together. You kind of pool your money, buy one. Then you get yourself a really long industrial extension cord to your neighbor's house, you know, and just go ahead and milk the power off that. No, it'd be interesting to see what practical uses there are. I mean, I kid about it, but it's definitely interesting. I would love to see it be both economical and allow someone just to walk in and actually participate in Bitcoin.
Yeah, because part of the aspect of Bitcoin mining isn't just about generating coins. It also helps secure the network because it does validation of the transactions.
Oh, okay.
So the wider the network, part of Bitcoin's value comes from the strength of its network. It's the largest group computing network in the world by a margin now. And the stronger that network is, the harder it is to perform a double spending attack and things like that. So even if you're a Bitcoin enthusiast, essentially the way I've looked at these USB miners is it's kind of like all of the big dogs have come in and they've gone upstream and they've pulled all the big chunks of gold out of the river.
Right.
But
right.
You could be down the river a couple miles with your strainer catching the gold flakes as they come down the river. And you're not going to make a ton of money, but you're going to help participate in a global network and in a new economy, secure that network. And from time to time, you might catch a few gold flakes in your pan.
That would be kind of cool.
Yeah.
I want to catch some gold flakes in my pan.
I have a...
Yeah, you have them. Yeah.
I have a similar unit that I'm not using right now because this is a 30 gigahash Butterfly Labs Bitcoin miner. Oh. And this works with Linux too. You see, it's just got one USB connector and then the power because it pulls quite a bit of power. And this guy right here is essentially that.
It's like a box and a fan with a connection.
With an ASICs in the middle. And all I have to do is plug this in, launch, I think it's KC miner, I can't remember which miner it was. Mm-hmm. And I would be mining from a Linux box without any additional load placed on my computer.
Oh,
so it's really nice because this guy does all of the work for me. And, you know, again, you could even hook it up to an Android tablet. So Butterfly Labs, among other companies, was there demoing that kind of stuff.
That's kind of cool. Is that still something people can do? I mean, what kind of benefit are they getting?
Well, no. But, you know, they're making new chips. There's new coins, too. There's new altcoins.
Some Litecoin and whatnot. Sure.
Yeah. Okay. I wonder if anybody in the chat room could toss me a link to Razer. Razer had an amazing concept PC. I don't know if I bookmarked it, and I wanted to show it to you guys because they also said it was Linux compatible.
Oh.
And I didn't save it. I don't know if anybody has a link to that. We'll demo that too because I don't think it's going to ship, but it looks super cool. First, though, I want to tell you about the product that I don't know if we'll ever get our hands on. I was so impressed with look at the chat room. I'll save it because the chat room is...
They're all throwing it out there.
It's called how about this, Matt? It's called the Christine.
Oh, dude, the car, right?
No, it's a PC.
I picture it trying to kill me and stuff. Yeah.
No, not the Chris Christie either. Look at this
Chris
thing.
Chris Christie.
This is an extreme PC. These are all modular. These are not hard drives. These are components connected to a PCI 3 Express bus.
Holy crap.
So like one box is the video card. One box could be some solid state storage. All of them connect to what they're calling a spine.
That is the coolest thing I've ever seen.
It's going to be Linux compatible, and the spine is mineral oil cooled. And when you plug in a device, you plug in a device to the spine, it has proprietary connectors that are self-sealing.
Right.
That then the mineral oil goes into that device that you plug into it. So now this is a total concept PC, but it's a modular PC. So the idea being you have these modules, you want a new video card, you pull off that module, you put in the new module. You want a new storage array, you pull that module off, you plug in a new one. The connectors have a specific PCI 3 connector on the back of it. I believe it's PCI Express 3.
That is awesome. Dude, I would seriously rock the hell out of that.
When you plug in that module, it gets that mineral oil into it because they've got self-sealing connectors to bring the oil into it. It could be a disaster, right? I mean, who really knows? But I wish they'd show
if
you.
If it had self-locking stem bolts like from Star Trek.
Self-sealing stem bolts.
Self-sealing,
yeah.
There.
I think it might. I think they are self-sealing.
I mean, it's got a goal, you know, right?
Yeah.
Just visually, it looks amazing. From a practical standpoint, being able to upgrade, not just because, you know, computers now, it's like you're still tied into your architecture. You're still tied into your CPU and your motherboard. At some level, you got to kind of gut that starter. But it looks like this kind of addresses that directly.
Yeah, it is. It's like it's a totally new way to do a customized PC.
Cool.
It's totally different.
It's very Star Trek.
May never ship.
Oh, it needs to.
It really
needs to ship.
It is very Star Trek. And here's another thing I don't think will ever ship is they have this this heads-up display on it that gives you a temperature readout of each individual component, right? And it identifies, like, this is GPU 2.
Mm.
So I got a little clip of it here of the Razer PC because they won one of the best in show awards at CES, and here's a demo.
And no longer will they have to, you know, open their systems up, tinker, make sure that things are compatible, make sure they're not cutting their hands up in upgrading their PCs. You can simply hot swap, plug in a component, and off you go. Also, the modularity of this design allows us to do some very, very cool things. I didn't mean to say cool, but it is cool. These here, as you look at the connectors of a module, these are military spec dripless connectors, and we use those to enable liquid cooling. So you have mineral oil inside each of these modules, which are being circulated by a pump contained within. They then have use heat exchangers to transfer the heat from the oil into the water, which is being circulated in the thermal tower itself.
Wow.
So that allows us to, at the individual module level, control both thermals and noise. And that's a perfect environment for overclocking, really maximizing performance without having any esoteric, you know, technical knowledge. So you've got a turnkey solution that is fully powered and upgradable and customizable. Those two concepts have sort of been mutually exclusive, but we're putting it together, and that's why we're thinking of it as the future of PC gaming.
You know, I look at something like this, and I think, boy, the price point of this is probably going to be pretty high.
Yeah, probably about $9,000 or so.
I love the concept, and I didn't even think about the individual thermal zones and the fact that it would probably be a lot quieter, too.
Well, and I'm going to go out on a limb and say this is probably something like this is already being used. You know, he's talking about some of the military specs of some of the components. I think this is probably already being used in the field in certain operational environments. So I could see this if they could do a dumbed down consumer version of it. Even at a $4,000 price point, that's really cool. I mean, people are buying like Power Macs and stuff, right?
True. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, this could be a Mac Pro.
I mean, really, it is. I mean, it's like, because it's, except that it's truly upgradable and it's really compelling.
And I also like the handle at the top.
See, it's very practical. So then you've got your LAN box, boom, bam, down, out the door.
Yeah.
You know?
And it shows you when you start really thinking, quote unquote, outside the box.
You can
come up with some neat stuff. Yeah. So that's pretty cool. All right. Speaking of outside the box, this last piece of hardware that came out, I cannot wait to see what the future holds for this. It's the Intel Edison. And it is an SD card-sized PC. It is an entire x86 PC in something the size of an SD card. And you can see it right here in this picture.
Nice.
Now, before you get too excited, it's a Pentium-class PC. It runs a Quark system on a chip, so it's probably around 400 megahertz or so.
Okay.
Not very much memory. But if you think about like what this would be used for, like, if you buy a Linksys router off the shelf, that thing's probably running 200 megahertz.
That's about right. Yeah.
So there's certain workloads that you don't have to have a crazy workload here, a crazy processor. Mm-hmm. They had an example of when you get something down this size, you could put a computer on baby's clothing. And then when a baby wakes up, you could have it automatically start the milk warmer or whatever, or alert the parents.
So you're saying you could basically roll your own data? Like data.
They called it Nursery 2.0. The concept was the baby was wearing a MIMO onesie outfitted with sensors tracking things like temperature. Wow. And Edison was used to display that information on all things a coffee mug.
Oh, my God. That is freaking epic.
Yeah. So when baby was comfortable, the blinking lights on the mug showed a happy, green, smiling face baby. But when something went wrong, the face turns red. And
awesome.
And it could even be set to activate the bottle warmer.
Now, here's the $10,000 question. Spouses, how do you think the reaction would be there? Do you think there'd be a lot of acceptance among them? I have no idea.
I think anything that makes mom's job easier.
You think?
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is just one example.
And it does hook up on a coffee mug. That's cool.
I mean, when you get x86 down this small, you have a lot of flexibility. They're obviously going after ARM, taking a little bit of a shot at some of the other uses. This isn't a buyable, sellable product yet. This is a demo. Intel does this a lot.
Very prototype.
Sure. Yeah. And I think even just putting it in an SD card was a bit of a statement saying, look how small we can get this Mamma Jamma, right?
That's crazy.
But because when you think of x86, you think hot, you think high power usage.
Wow.
Cameras, right? You could put this in a digital camera. I mean, gosh, the potential there is so huge.
Oh, yeah. A digital camera and then talking about doing, you know, like teaching someone to take pictures. Right. I mean, thinking about like, is your angle right? Or are you doing like actually being able to give feedback to your instructor? I mean, you start putting it into learning situations. Yeah, it's pretty powerful.
You could put this in a golf club it could be tracked. You know, the chat room says, by the way, you could maybe put it in Chris's head. Yeah. That's what looks familiar. Thanks. I'd take that if it made me do a better show.
I used to sleepwalk and pee on things. I mean, this would be epic because it would prevent that from happening. My brother once peed on a TiVo.
Oh, jeez,
he was drunk, but still, I'm just saying. So, I mean, you can actually correct that behavior by introducing electrical shocks to your cerebral cortex.
Boy, that's bringing it back. I have some sleepover stories that involve some peeing, Matt. I got to tell you. Chat room also points out that, you know, you could put it in a drone. You could put it in a coffee mug at the bottom.
It would allow you to pre-cache in a way we've never experienced before.
That's true, Matt. So these really are some of the best things from CES. And in some ways, it's very much stuff that is 1.0 or not even that, like WebOS and Firefox OS on TVs, the Intel Edison, the Steam boxes. Mm-hmm. But it also, in my mind, is showing a changing of the guard in such a major way with diminishing presence of Microsoft, with the focus on Linux-powered devices because these manufacturers want to manufacture the entire experience, right? They don't want to be beholden to Microsoft.
Well, it feels like the monopolies are crumbling and we're beginning to see it more the old school democracy of hardware and ideas and concepts.
And those monopolies are being crumbled by it's a death from 1,000 nails or whatever.
It really is. Right? Yeah. Yeah, 1,000 paper cuts.
Yeah, paper cuts. Because it's not one thing. It's not like Apple was there and showed some brand new Macintosh computer that everybody's going to buy over a Windows PC. Yep. It was all these different things that fill these different roles, and Windows just doesn't have a place on things like the Edison and stuff like that.
It does not. Now, if we can see this happen with the web stuff, Google, that would be cool too.
Yeah. Chromebooks had a decent showing there, but nothing crazy.
Well, I think Google's still kind of peaking up. It's still hitting its highs. You know, it'll probably be a while before we see anything happen there. But, you know, one step at a time.
Yeah.
One step at a time.
Pretty interesting stuff, Matt. I think it's been an interesting CES. And the thing that I'm still looking forward to the most is finding out more about these Steam boxes.
Oh, yeah.
Prices are all over the place, but we saw a lot of competitive offers from different vendors. And it's going to be a lot of buyer's choice. And then we'll work out which ones are the strongest contenders.
Right.
A lot of different takes, like, you know, behind TV mounted to towers to tiny Alienware rigs.
And the little compact ones, you know, it's like just for the casual games. I would love that. That'd be so cool.
All right, Matt, that's the Linux Action Show's roundup of the best of CES. And that brings us to the end of this week's broadcast. But Matt, before we get out of here, I wanted to cover a couple of emails.
All right.
Both relevant to our interests. Rasmus writes in, he says, "Dear Chris and Matt, first I'd like to say thanks for the great show. I really enjoy it. I watch Jupiter Broadcasting for almost a year." And he has a monthly sub, too. So thank you very much, sir. He says, "Before I end this email, please check out the Indiegogo campaign." Now, he actually didn't link me to the Indiegogo campaign, but I'd already become a contributor, so I already knew about it.
Good.
It's called AirTame. Wireless HDMI for everyone. Display your computer screen and sound on Mac, Windows, or Linux to your TV, projector, or monitor wirelessly. And I'll play just a little bit of the video from the campaign. Hi.
Indiegogo, my name is Attila. If you've ever wanted to display your PC on a bigger screen, you've most likely faced issues that we've had before. About 2 years ago, we started working on a solution of our own. Here I have a prototype of AirTame. It's an HDMI dongle you can plug into any TV, projector, monitor, and power it up through the USB. AirTame is now ready for any computer to stream to. You can duplicate your computer screen and show the same content as your PC. You can also extend your desktop to have more workspace, or duplicate to multiple AirTames at the same time. We support full HD and sound as well.
So
AirTame now consists of 5 people.
I love this because the idea I had was I have Linux boxes back in my audio production studio, and on the live stream I can't send their screen to the remote. If I had a wireless HDMI dongle, that might work. And the fact that you can broadcast to multiple devices.
Yeah, this goes farther than Chromecast by far.
Yeah.
It really does.
So AirTame has won the best of CES from Engadget. And there's actually still 6 days left on the Indiegogo campaign if you want to get in at the $89 perk. Damn. Where you get you as part of the backing, you get an Airtame device. They're at 702,000 of their 160 goals.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Man, that's awesome.
So they show different I guess it's a two-part component, but
it looks like it looks like it is.
They're going to have an official Raspberry Pi firmware that's been unlocked. The device itself will have dual core processor. They're still, if they get, it looks like now they're going to also have a dual 2.4 and 5 gigahertz capabilities. And if they reach a million, they're going to also have the ability to mirror iOS and Android screens. Wow. Don't know how they do that.
Oh, man, that would be so awesome.
Yep, these guys were featured on Linux Gizmos recently as well.
Mm.
Pretty cool idea. We'll put a link to this in the show notes if you guys want to kick in. It's still 6 days left at $89 mm-hmm. to get the device, of course. Taking that risk on your own, but I guess they were actually demoing a working prototype at CES.
That's so, so awesome. So it's hey, Ubuntu phone guys, you know, this is an example of something that you can actually demonstrate to folks. This is really getting it done. Back in the early days when they were trying to do their
selling
their stuff.
Selling like crazy because they show, you know, and as soon as they showed a working unit at CES, that Indiegogo campaign skyrocketed.
That's all you got to have is you got to have something.
And then they won an award from Engadget.
That's awesome. I think that's compelling. That's great.
Zach the Penguin writes in. He says, hey, guys, what's up? I've been following the news about Steam boxes and just thought I'd add my 2 cents. Don't spend it all one place.
No,
very excited about all the boxes announced, but mostly I'm interested in the iBuyPower and the CyberPower PC boxes. I'm fairly new to PC gaming, having grown up on consoles, so I tend to approach gaming from that perspective. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As such, the price point of the two boxes mentioned are competitive in that respect, and the specs seem to be pretty decent for the price, too, so I'll probably consider one of those consoles in the future. Is it me, or have the other boxes completely ignored who they're catering to? Anyone that would spend $1,000 on a computer probably just build their own to get more bang for their buck. Meanwhile, console gamers will see the prices way too high since they can't get console gaming at a fraction, since they can get it at a fraction of the price for consoles. What do you guys say? Is $6,000 too much to spend on a Steam box?
Two things. One, that's the extreme end of things. So, I mean, that's one example. There's certainly a lot of things in the middle there. But I think more importantly, these are early days. So you look at any, you know, Blu-ray player, DVD, whatever, you know, any type of device itself. When they first come out, they're always super, super high.
Good point.
It's going to come down in price over time, and it's going to have to do so quickly. Thankfully, they do have these partnerships in place, and so that's possible sooner versus later.
Yeah, I've definitely been hearing people have been talking about Twitter and email and in the subreddit. People are saying it's too high, they're too expensive. I think I said it during our predictions episode. I think this first generation is going to be like this. It's just they're going to be freaking expensive. They're full-fledged PCs with awesome gaming cards in them. And a lot of us, that's what we want. I think consoles are boring because the graphics get out of date almost by the time they ship. And, you know, you take that a few years forward, they're even more boring.
And the only thing consoles have at this point, and this very well may change, are certain key titles that have millions of dollars of marketing behind them. Killzone, for example. Mm-hmm. You know, you have these specific titles that have just become ingrained, you know, Battlefield. Things like that.
You know who I think will make...
No, not Battlefield.
You know, maybe this will help with the price. This is, I'm just getting crazy here. But you know who might be, besides us Linux gamers, the first batch of Steam box purchasers?
Who's that?
Mac users.
You think?
Because they're willing to spend money on hardware, and their Macs don't play all the games.
Do they know how to play video games?
I mean, well, this is the thing. They do, but they don't. I mean, yeah, Macs have games.
I've never met a Mac.
But I don't think, you know, if you're a Mac user, the last thing you want to do is futz with a Windows box. Now you get the PC gaming options without having to futz with a Windows box. And because you're willing to buy a, you know, $2,500 MacBook Pro or whatever, you might be willing to buy a $700 gaming PC. You can dual boot the Mac too, but I think Mac users don't want to have to bother with Windows. So those could be some early adopters. Plus, they've already have Steam games, so their Steam purchases will move over.
Right.
Linux users will be early adopters. This first generation, until Intel Broadwell chips come out, is going to be really expensive. Then when the Broadwell chips come out, we'll have another generation of Intel GPUs under the belt. Mm-hmm. Again, only having to do 1080p resolution. It could be very compelling at the beginning of 2015 with these Intel power graphics that might be capable. Not to mention, NVIDIA's working on some crazy stuff right now with their chips that can get that price down. So you never know.
I think that's going to be the real key. If they really want to just, and I was hoping they were going to do this early on, but it doesn't look like they're quite there yet. They got to get the price point down. They've got to actually address the fact that not every casual gamer wants a Wii. You know, some people don't, you know, we don't necessarily want a full-blown monster machine, but we want to play games. But at the same time, we don't want to drop, you know, over $700 on a device either.
Yeah, the price will have to come down for the majority of people.
Yeah, you really do. So I'm excited about the little boxes.
You know where we're at right now?
Sub-$500 guys.
Back when Valve launched Steam, the game distribution platform, mm-hmm. people stuck their nose up in the air and said, what is this game company? I mean, they're a good game company, but a distribution platform, that's definitely outside their wheelhouse. This is not their zone. I'm not sure what they're thinking about. People crapped on it. You know, and here's another device that really changed things is the iPhone. So the iPhone came out like this, as of this week, it was like 7 years ago. And I was reading a thread on Reddit of the comments following Steve Jobs' announcement.
Right. Well, this is stupid. Why would
Wow, did people miss the mark on that? Yeah. I mean, and I don't remember exactly where I fell down on it either. I was BlackBerry at the time. Yeah, I had a BlackBerry at the time.
I had BES action and the whole thing.
I liked my BlackBerry.
Oh, I still have it. And
the battery was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
But people were so wrong. Yeah. So wrong about the iPhone and the iPad mm-hmm. and other hardware devices like that came out that when I look, I think Valve in some ways is similar. Like, people were so wrong about Steam when Steam first launched, and now Steam is the dominant game distribution platform for the PC. And I think what the Steam Box is it's Valve not necessarily trying to have another way to make money. It's Valve's attempt to save the PC industry because they see the direction things are going, and they see that their money is made on PC gaming, and they've got to do something to keep the graphics card manufacturers making graphics cards, to keep people pushing the envelope forward on making badass tiny PCs that fit in the living room. Like, it is in Valve's best interest just to have this industry doing these kinds of things.
Well, and I think it's also important to remember there are, in fact, games that will run on Iris and will do so fine. Obviously not all games in the Steam library are going to run that. But a lot, though. It's increasingly, as the specs get better and as the games actually find a way to kind of meet that need, we're getting there.
If you got a way that was easy or even just consumer acceptable way to start with an embedded graphics and then add an external graphics or add a graphics card later, you know, as long as that's not that hard, people could do that as well.
I'm excited for it.
One last bit of follow-up before we get out of here. The Yaci Pi project that Q5 sits in the IRC chat room and on a subreddit and all over the Jupiter Broadcasting community has been working on. He's halfway to his goal. Nice. He's got 82 backers. He's at $5,000 of $10,000. This is a project to give you a turnkey solution to roll your own peer-to-peer search engine. Replace Google. And again, I always talk about how if we want open and free solutions to replace some of these closed-up cloud solutions on the web, the only way we're going to drive those things forward is if we actually use them.
That's right.
Right. So we've got to be active participants in breaking up the monopoly. And this is a fun project, and it's a great use. We talked to Q5Sys on last week's Linux Unplugged, and he gave us a little bit of behind-the-scenes info on what he's doing to a custom build of Puppy Linux to make the performance good on a Raspberry Pi. It's pretty exciting. He's got different backer levels where if you get in, you'll actually get a Raspberry Pi with a unit. I got one right here. Where when he's done, I'm going to get a Model B Raspberry Pi with the required cables, a case, mm-hmm. and the SD card with it ready to go out of the box.
I think that's your sweet spot right there. Mm-hmm. It really is.
Mm-hmm. He's got 200 or more, too, with 13 left of 25. So some different options there. So if you go to Kickstarter.com, search for Yaci Pi, YACYPI, and maybe consider giving that a backing. It's a member of our community, and he's trying to bring search back to us.
That's right.
Back to the users.
The All power. Right.
Matt, where should we send folks for you throughout the week if they want to
Linux Unplugged.
In? Oh, look at that. Linux Unplugged, our weekly Linux podcast that takes place on Tuesdays. We had the herd mentality where we talked about if open source innovation is inhibited by group consensus and decision making. And I think we kind of came out in a pretty good spot on that.
I think so.
So that was episode 22 last week of Linux Woo-hoo. Unplugged. Yeah, go check that. You can find both of us doing that every Tuesday. We'd love to have you join us live for that show, too, because we have a virtual lug in our mumble room where we get to chat with people. If you can't make it to Linux Unplugged live, what about LAS? Sundays at 10 a.m. Pacific over at jblive.tv. That's when we do this here show. And, of course, you can go to jupiterbroadcasting.com/calendar to get it converted to your local time zone. And, hey, if you'd like to get a hold of us, there's two really good ways to do it. Number one, the subreddit, linuxactionshow.reddit.com. We're there all the time, active community, and you got a way higher chance we're going to see your feedback than email. But if you're an emailer, you still got a good chance. Go over to jupiterbroadcasting.com, pop that contact link at the top of our website, and then submit a contact form and choose Linux Action Show from the dropdown. And you know what? Also, just a big thank you to Heimer16 and Rotten Corpse in our IRC chat room. They helped refresh the website this week with the new logo.
Good stuff. Yeah,
people are getting their shirts now, and also people got their shipping refunded. Mm-hmm. We went into more details in Faux Show 159 about that. So we decided now that people are getting the shirts, it was time to put the logo up on the site.
Yay!
So there it is.
Good stuff.
And it's looking really good. It's got a little dark bottom here now. And yeah, So thank you to Heimer 16 and Rotten Corpse who are working on
great.
That. Working their butts off for us, too. It's really cool. So some good stuff coming up in 2014, you guys. And we got a lot of, we got a really fun episode planned for tomorrow. For next Sunday, too.
Definitely. So be sure and to which faux show can they find out about all these 2014 plans?
159, Matt. Episode
159.
This week's latest faux show.
Latest faux show.
Just check that out. All right, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning this week's episode of the Linux Action Show. We'll see you right back here next week. All right, Matt, I'm going to wrap us up. Here I go. It is the end of the segment of the show, and it begins. And I'll I got a smoker.
I want to do something, too, with you.
That she does.
What?
It's something you can teach me, will you?
Space doing it.
Well, it's something actually, he can teach her. I think she's asking the wrong guy.
There are some games I don't fictionally quite know
speaking,
yet.
Of course.
It's playing ball. Will Wheaton, sorry. Can you teach me?
Oh, sure.
That's a sex joke.
Yeah, for the ball.
It is.
That's a sex joke. I teased that Chase would be joining us like on the faux show, on TechSnap.
Yeah. Hey, you know, that's okay. I just wanted to get better.
I'll mention it. Don't let me forget the end of the segment. I'll mention he was going to join us, but he got the CES plug.
I'll try and remember that. And, all right. Get better, Chase.
How Gmail is adding the G+ contacts.
Oh, yeah.
So everybody is on G+ is like, oh, it's no big deal. Everybody's getting all upset. Well, screw you. You have no idea. I already get so much email from every time Google does something, groups, events, whatever it is on G+, whenever they change
something.
Then
you gotta go turn it off.
Or right? Jesus, the YouTube integration with Google+, I get so much, every time somebody comments on any of the 1,000+ videos on YouTube, yeah. I get an email. Every time somebody comments. And they just turn that crap on by default. Somebody creates an event, turn that crap on by default.
Right.
Somebody adds me to a circle, and they specifically don't do public, but they do your circles. I get a freaking email. Every time they turn it on, every new feature in G+ means more email in Chris's inbox. And now if you just freaking use Gmail and you just start typing my name, you can just send me an email. And I already get too much email. And I want to know what the hell, Google? And yes, I already turned it off. I already turned off that setting.
But it's going to be turned on next time they do an update, which has happened to me.
The next time they change something, it'll be, let's fill Chris's email box up again. And it completely neuters my Gmail inbox. It makes it a wasteland every time they do it. And this is the problem with Google, is they are willing to push Google+ at the cost of everything else. How long until they integrate Google+ into Google Docs? And then you know what the next step is, and I'm not even kidding about this. Google+ is going to get Google Voice integration, then pretty soon they're going to be able to search for you, and they'll just freaking get your Google Voice number, and they'll call you. Although I'm sure they'll obscure the number for you, but they'll make the damn connection. And pretty soon, I'll be sitting here doing a show, and this phone's going to start ringing. I already get Hangout requests all the time.
Oh, I hate that.
Let's talk about Hangouts. So then they turn on Hangouts, and now I'm constantly getting notifications about Hangouts and all this kind of crap on my phone. It drives me crazy. Stop bugging me with your crap, Google. End of rant. Oh, that tasted like bacon. I gotta boot Google this year. I gotta stop using Gmail. I gotta stop
pulling off the Band-Aid there.
Yeah, I mean, I'll still use Search and G+, but I'm just like, my inbox is just gonna be, that's where all my spam. I mean, they have already made the decision. Google has made the decision that my email, Gmail inbox, is my spam email account.
Yep.
And then if I want a real adult email account that it actually be used for doing business and work and communicating with family members and friends, I need to go spin up my own email server. Because apparently, what I want to use my inbox for is not as important as what Google wants. They say the devices in those components are just PCI Express devices. So as long as it's an NVIDIA card in that housing and you have the NVIDIA driver.
Yeah. There you go. Bob's your uncle.